right, folks, welcome back to Last Mountain West Wire Football Podcast Edition. That's right. Yeah, we took a few weeks off. That's fine. We needed a break because Matt Kennerly there. Not much to talk about unless you want to dive into the combine, which we will. I will do one brief re-record because we did 2 minutes ago, unless you're watching American football, AAF, which some people are. But we're here to talk combine because we're going to talk football, right? Because that's what we're
doing. Yeah, I mean, finally, there's one of the first major off-season signposts.
That's true. That is. We've passed signing day, second signing day. It is March now, so March Madness. Hey, we have some March Madness stuff on the site because, well, did you see anything about the Nevada-Utah State game post-game, I'm assuming, Matt? Because you're on Twitter.
I was following everything on Twitter, as I usually do.
There's some shenanigans going on. I don't know.
There's a lot of that, yeah.
There's some glass breaking, cops calling, court storming, I should say.
maybe there was some Stork Corman. You
never
know.
There could have been something. I apologize. But for football purposes, the combine's going on right now. It's been going on for a couple days. We're recording here Sunday, March 3rd. There's a couple, I think there's a few more days left. So what we're going to talk about is like who's going to go where, sort of, what's been going on. And we'll just kind of, like I said, we had to start over after a minute in because that's what we do. Oh, yeah, the website's mwire.com. If you're listening to us, you probably know that, right? That makes sense.
Hopefully.
If not, check it out, right?
Oh, yeah.
if you stumbled across us because you found the Nevada video and then you say, hell, they have a podcast. Oh, they have a football podcast. I will check it out. So thank you if you're a new listener. Shoot us on Twitter, MWCWire. But the combine is a big sticking point. So there is some spring football going on. We won't really get into that yet. Maybe we'll do a spring thing next week once there's over a week's worth of practices because I believe only Colorado State has had enough substantial practices at the moment. But let's get to the combine. We were doing our tight end discussion before I realized, hey, we're not recording, so blame me if this take two is okay and not gold like the first one. Because, Matt, you said some amazing things. I don't know if we could recreate here.
I will do my best, I promise.
All right, so tight end. Dax Raymond, Josh Oliver, and as we begin our discussion with, Khalil Waring of San Diego State. Insert your not passing joke because I already did that once, so make up your own. And let's go back to Warren because you kind of led off with him about kind of who he is and who the heck is he. Because like I said, joking aside or not joking, he was a good receiver. That's not a joke. The joke is give him more passes and maybe he would have been a higher pick, potential higher pick upcoming.
Yeah, he's kind of like one of those maybe sleepers that draft next like to talk about. But when you look on what he's been able to do in the combine in Indianapolis, He's really stood out in a lot of ways. You know, he had a broad jump and a vertical jump that were both above the 85th percentile. And some of his comparisons, if you go to Mock Draftable like I do, like there's some really interesting names that are thrown onto the list when you try to compare them to Waring. Like the number one name, which I think is one of the number one names that a lot of people have been talking about in general, is actually one of the other tight ends in this year's draft class, which is TJ Hawkinson from Iowa. You know, he and Waring are 88% comps, which I think is very interesting. And his number two comp is Dallas Clark, who, if you recall from the Peyton Manning Colts, you know, he was a really reliable weapon for more than a few years.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to me to see him kind of emerge when he's been in one kind of offense. But he's showing the kind of physical tools that make you think that he can do just fine in another.
Well, that's true. And like we said, if he got the ball more, maybe he'd be considered a higher pick. But all these tight ends are great. And looking like what he has the perfect size, like Dallas Clark, that's a great example. I think he was probably all pro a couple times, at least Pro Bowl for sure.
Pretty sure, yeah.
If you get compared to that guy, imagine what he could do if he comes in and – because tight ends, like in NFL – he's not like a Jimmy Graham or those type of receiver type tight ends. He's 6'5", 250, so he's not basically a wide receiver that's 6'8", or something. You know what I mean? Like 6'8", 210. He's a guy who will be great in the NFL, I think, potentially, because if he goes to a team where they want to run the ball, he can actually block. He's not going to be pulled out for somebody else. So, yeah, it's okay. He's only in the block a handful of plays, but you're on the field. You're playing more. That's another benefit that – other tight ends may not bring to the table all the time. They're just a pass catching guy. If you're that size, you could be a guy where you could, it's a play action play. Basically, let me rephrase what I'm saying here. He's not a guy, it's not like a tell on your team. It's like, oh, this guy's in, he's not going to block, they're going to pat, he's running a route. he could play where our defenses actually have to recognize where he should be if he's actually just an extra lineman to pass block, or actually going to go out and run a route. If they sub him in for somebody else, oh, they know they're going to run because he's their blocking tight end. Oh, he's their cat pass catching tight end. So that could be a role where it's like the NFL. If he could play multiple positions, like Rashard Penny and other guys who will return kicks and play another position, you better chance to make a roster, even if he ends up being a fifth round pick. I'm not sure where he's going now, but like not for sure number one or number two on the depth chart for the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you're speaking of comps, you know, one of the things that really jumps out to me is that among the three guys in this year's combine class, to me, it's Josh Oliver who has the most interesting names. Like some of his performances don't necessarily jump off the charts in the same way that Waring did. You know, because he, oddly enough, I find it hilarious that, you know, when you measure 6'4" and 5/8 inches, that's only the 54th percentile. Like, that's really hard to imagine, right?
So in that chart, is that for the draft class or NFL comparison overall?
Well, mock draftable, what it does is it compares data for each of the different exercises that are measured from combine to combine, and I think it goes back to like 2003, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so it's the guys who are at the combine.
Yes,
the past decade plus.
Yeah.
Okay.
But among those guys, you know, among the top four, I think he has two very interesting names. One of them is Austin Hooper, who, if you've paid attention to the NFL at all, he's been kind of an up and comer for a year or two now with the Atlanta Falcons. But right next to him,
oh yeah,
Rob Gronkowski.
Future Hall of Famer, Rob Gronkowski.
Future Hall of Famer. So when you know, maybe if you're an NFL team and you see Josh Oliver grabbing one-handed catches, you know, out running passes 15, 20 yards down the field, maybe that's the kind of athleticism that you dream upon. But I think that regardless of whichever of these tight ends you favor, I think they're all going to fit pretty nicely into what's turning out to be a very deep tight end class.
Yeah, because it's... Yeah, this is what, because tight ends, usually it's not a position where got to have a tight end. And Oliver's sort of in the same, like he's more of a pass catcher guy. He's in the same size range of San Diego State's pass catcher. But you look at like what he did, you want to know an interesting number? His 40 time is 4.63.
Mm-hmm.
That's faster than Alexander Mattison, a running back.
Huh.
So that's probably bad for Mattison, but good for him, right?
I think it depends on how you split it. Like, I'm assuming that once we get a little further into draft season, we're going to talk a little more about speed score,
mm-hmm.
The general principle that follows, if you're not familiar with it, is that, you know, a 4.4 time run by somebody who's bigger is generally more interesting, if not more valuable, than a 4.4 run by somebody who's a little bit lighter. It's the difference between like Danelle Pumphrey running that kind of elite speed and Rashard Penny, because there was like what, 40, 50 pounds between the two?
Something like that. Yeah, it's like
something like that.
If you're big and can run that fast, holy crap, get out of the way.
But I think that, you know, if, since we're talking about Mattison real quick, the thing that I think that a lot of people need to keep in mind, especially if you're thinking about your own NFL teams, is that, you know, even if speed was not necessarily Madison's game, you know, we saw him hurdle guys more than once last year.
Yeah, he's athletic dude. Clearly.
And so when you're looking at that broad jump and that vertical jump, you know, that is where he really stood out in this year's combine. You know, he was above average in both of those things. And we saw him take a lot of physical punishment down the stretch last year for the Broncos. So even if an NFL team isn't necessarily going to ask him to carry the ball 20 times, I think they've seen enough from him on tape and at the combine to suggest that he would probably fit right in as more of a kind of a bowling ball kind of guy.
Oh yeah.
You know, someone who could take, you know, 10 or 12 carries and really work teams between the tackles.
Yeah, he likes to play in Fresno multiple times, like the fourth quarter, second half. He's a guy, 20-plus carries. Not like, I mean, I get that, but he's a guy, if like, all right, we need you for a late drive, and he's maybe the backup and gets those reps, he's a guy to be fresh, he could just knock you over.
Yeah.
And so, but let's go back to one last tight end. We don't need to skip over possibly the highest draftable tight end, Utah State's mm-hmm. Dax Raymond, who is getting more pub now, partly because he, what did he miss, three games this year, I think it was? A couple games?
Yeah, a little bit of time.
He missed a few games until his, I know they don't only look at stats and numbers, but there's two things. That could be maybe a slight concern, oh, he got hurt. But his numbers, like, oh, who, like, we know who he is. We know he can play well, but if there's you're at, like I said, you're the NFL guy, you're listening to this, and your team is whoever in college, be like Boise State or you, not Utah State, but just because they're on their team, but UNLV or something, but you like the Raiders come to town, you go, oh, I'm a Raiders fan now or whatever. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. could he find out maybe he can fit with your team? Because, you know, hey, Gruden has 3 first round picks.
Oh, yeah.
But he might be the highest drafted guy, because I ever check out, the Draft Network. Do you ever check peruse that website?
Yes, every.
It's a pretty new site, but these guys have been around for a while. They say he could be like a top 100 pick, which would be a day 2 pick, I believe, right?
Let's see.
Just about. Maybe whatever the
conceptual. With competition picks, yeah. Everything, yeah.
I was going to say conceptory, but I can never say it. But competition picks is better. I can never say, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Compensatory.
There we go. There you go. English. Perfect. I know it. But he could be the highest one taken. And he was in Utah State offense that passed a lot. They moved the ball down the field quite a bit. So he got, even though he missed a few games, had plenty of opportunities. And I don't know who'll be the top one taken, but it's not just him. There's so many guys. Like in other draft classes, he might be one of the higher draft eligible tight ends. Because looking at, I think, who is it, Dane Bugler at The Athletic. He used to do stuff with CBS and some other draft scout, I believe it was. He has him, like, I think, a top 10 tight end for sure, but like number 6 or 7. But if you're like the 6th or 7th tight end and it's still a top 100 pick maybe, how many tight ends are going? That's is this the year of the tight end? I don't know.
It could be. I mean, I think because you're seeing more and more on the NFL level how having a very, you know, physically gifted tight end can make a difference. You know, you look at guys like O.J. Howard, for instance, or as I mentioned earlier, someone like Hooper, who even if they're not the number one guy in that offense, can be that kind of third or fourth option over the middle, getting chunk yardage when they need it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that with what we've seen from each of those three guys over the last couple of years, Oliver and Raymond and Waring, that I would not be surprised if one or all of those guys finds their way at least into a niche role starting next year.
Yeah, for sure. NFL.com NFL.com has him as tight end 13, but that's fine. There's a lot of tight ends. He left a year early, but part of it is I don't know why they list him as redshirt senior. That's not true, but he could add another year, but he went to Russia for a couple years after high school and all honorable mention conference. Part of it too, if you look at it, his family, NFL and brother, college are not like pretty good athletes. Mm-hmm. We know what we can do. I guess the biggest thing, he's going to be 24 years old next year.
Yeah.
And people think he needs to put more bulk on, which obviously he will, even though he's sitting at 6'5", 255. What do they want a tight end to be? 6'5", 270? That seems like almost an not offensive lineman, but you know, I mean, that seems a bit too big. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know what the deal is with that, but we've seen he can play. If you can make the plays, you impress at Pro Day, you impress at Combine, he'll get taken. I think the top 100 pick is ambitious, what people are saying, but I think all three of these guys will get taken.
I think you're right.
So do we want to discuss any other players? Anything else that stood out, or we can do a Combine more in depth later?
So what I think is interesting is, you know, even though Brett Rypien isn't necessarily considered among kind of the you know, in the conversation as a first round pick, right?
Correct.
Can we just say for a minute that I think it's really interesting that Dwayne Haskins ran a 40 about as fast as I could.
What?
No, actually, that's an exaggeration. He's definitely faster than I am.
So what you're telling me is Steve Smith is wrong saying he's a running quarterback.
I think he might be. Yeah.
But what did he exactly run? I didn't see the number. What exactly did he run? I got it right here.
Well, Haskins was like 5.06 or something like that.
504.
Yeah. But not to say that that's going to really make a dent in his desirability, I don't think. No. But I was just curious because what I wanted to do was I was interested to see what the comparisons stacked up with, especially for those who have done all of the things and it's been uploaded to Mock Draftable and everything. Mm-hmm. Did you happen to see Brett Rypien's number one comp?
No, I haven't. I haven't looked at Mock Draftable until today or from last year when we talked about this stuff. What is his number one comp?
So it's only a comparison of like 82%, but the number one comparison is Baker Mayfield.
I'll take it. Right?
I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily say that Brett Rypien has Baker Mayfield's arm, but I would not say that it's not a huge gap between the two.
However, also on the list, Colt McCoy, and Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah.
Which may not be the best NFL comparison.
But also Will Grier.
We'll see about him, but he's a current guy who should be probably taking.
It's a very interesting list of comps now that I really look at it.
CJ Beathard, who you're familiar with him, right?
Let's not talk about CJ Beathard. But I think that you know, even if Ripon isn't a carbon copy of Mayfield, I think that, you know, again, this whole combine exercise is just one part of the scouting process, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you combine that with the kinds of throws that he's shown to be able to make on the field, I think that, you know, his standing as maybe a third round pick is what I've been seeing in most of the mock drafts recently. I really don't see anything in this combine performance that would really dissuade me of that if I'm a team looking for, you know, if not necessarily a quarterback of the future, maybe a quarterback that they can groom for the next year or two.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a guy who's coming in and play right away, because unless you're a first rounder, which he's not going to be, we've seen last year, every first round quarterback played at some point. Lamar Jackson was the last one to get in late in the year, and part of that was with Joe Flacco getting hurt late in season, but now Flacco's gone, so he's going to be the guy. So he's not going to start right away. It's going to be something where, you're right, where a team that really should take him would be a team that has a quarterback that's nearing the end of their career a little bit. It's like what the Saints tried to do with Garrett Grayson from CSU with Drew Brees there. Third-round pick. Didn't quite get there, but Brees is still playing at an extremely high level. But a place, like, if you look around, like, easy comparison, like a Pittsburgh, New England, who need a quarterback within a couple years. Something like that, where maybe even Carolina, but Cam should be there for a while. Something like that, where a player, you have a couple years, like you may take I don't know when he'll go, third, fourth round, something seems likely. Even later, he could be a guy who could sit back for a year or two and just kind of figure things out. That would be most ideal, where you go to a place, or even like Atlanta, where you have Matt Ryan there, who's not going to play forever. Some of those, like, places.
Would it be crazy to throw a Kirk Cousins comp out there for him?
No, I don't think that's crazy. I think that could make sense, right?
If he ends up having a Kirk Cousins kind of career, a lot of people wouldn't complain about that.
Yeah, I think the only argument against that is, I guess if you look at NFL-wise, is that he just puts up numbers because the teams had to stay in game. Defenses were bad in Washington and stuff like that. But who cares? If you put up numbers and you can throw the ball, that's a legit starting quarterback. Cousins is in Minnesota, got a lot of money. But why not? If you can do that, because we've seen his games this year. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes either. And we kind of joke the good and bad Brett Ripon. It's, you know, you can't really do that in the NFL, but a lot of teams and players have multiple picks in games. But he's a guy who is pretty accurate, I would say. He's played more than probably played starting quarterback at the FBS level. One of the top 3 to 4 most experienced players as well in this league is coming into the NFL as well. So that's got to take into consideration, because you see when the Bears took Trubisky, he had, a dozen starts for North Carolina?
Yeah.
And so I think he'll be fine in the NFL. I'm wondering, do you think he could be one of the more successful guys in a long time in NFL and from the Mountain West as a quarterback? Like, is that potential there?
Yeah, I think so.
Because you got Derek Carr, and that's about it, right? Who's consistently playing well at quarterback?
Unless you want to reach way further back and say Alex Smith before he got hurt last year.
Oh, that leg injury. Like, even if he were to be, let's say this, I know Alex Smith is number one, which was probably not the best choice, but there's a lot of different reasons why he didn't pan out as great for being, I guess, compared to being that selection. If he had a similar career to Alex Smith, that would be one of the best quarterbacks ever in the conference and be a pretty good NFL career.
That's true.
Alex Smith didn't do bad for himself, even though number one, but Kansas City, he did well. Like, to go to him, like, you're familiar. How many offensive coordinators did he have in San Francisco? It's like every other year. And that's a big deal when players don't play well. But that'd be fine. I think he'll be one of the better. Also, you notice I kind of chuckle a little bit, Ryan Finley being projected higher than him. North Carolina State, former Boise quarterback who transferred after didn't get the job when Ripon took over.
Well, you know, Ryan Finley did pretty well for himself at North Carolina State.
No, I'm just saying it's kind of, there could be two former Boise quarterbacks taking an NFL draft this year.
I mean, I think that's a, if nothing else, that's a point of recruiting. To be like, hey, we developed We had a hand in developing multiple NFL draft quarterback. Yeah.
in the same year. So there's that. Any other running back, wide receiver thing we mentioned, or can we just
I don't think so.
we can transition to our topic because we'll bring back these guys as well. Really quick, just 30 minutes ago, I see a Jeffrey Allison video from the combine. Good for him.
Very
Saying,
cool.
looking fast and lean out there. Go dogs. There you go. But what we're talking about, our main topic, is holy crap, we're missing what players this year? Who's not coming back? We have to replace who? That's kind of what we're going to discuss for today. And we have Jeffrey Allison there mentioned, Brett Rypien we talked about, Alexander Mattison, Dax Raymond. So how do we want to do this? We've sort of discussed how we want to kind of work this out. I think we should go with who's like the biggest player they're going to miss and maybe who will replace them if we know it's the moment.
Yeah, sounds good.
So what team should we start with?
Do you want to go in alphabetical order?
I guess so. So that means we have to go Air Force Falcons, who are bringing basically everybody back this year.
Well, not
Well,
everybody.
a lot of people.
But I mean, I think that relative to a lot of other teams that we'll probably debate this about, to me, the answer this time around is pretty clear. Because while throwing the football isn't necessarily the most important part of the offense, having reliable pass catchers is something that the Falcons absolutely need. So to me, Marcus Bennett, as the number one guy last year with 39 targets, 24 catches, 465 yards, three scores, all of that put together, that kind of efficiency on something that's more of a 50-50 proposition more often than not, while they do have a lot of pieces coming back elsewhere on the offense, to me, finding someone who can be that next deep threat guy is something, maybe the most important question that the Falcons will have to resolve this offseason.
It's a pretty good one. As for who replaced, we probably have no clue, right? Because it's him and not many other people after him who catch passes.
Well, yeah, and if you look at the list of guys who caught passes last year, Bennett's gone, Ronald Cleveland's gone, Andrew Smith is gone, all those, that's what, 50 catches right there between those three
It's
guys.
almost all their passes.
Yeah, and if you look at Bill Connolly's team stat sheet, the only guy who's listed as a receiver who's coming back is Brandon Lewis, and he only caught five passes.
So is it going to be him, maybe?
I mean, I would assume that he's going to be in the mix, but without any kind of depth chart that I've seen so far, it's really hard to say. But that'll be kind of one of those big, I don't know if you want to call it a mystery, but that is how Air Force seems to do a lot of things these days. Just finding guys to step up and fill that void is probably going to be the number one question for that offense.
I think it has to be maybe number one overall because they bring back their quarterbacks, whoever's going to play, but hopefully it's Donald Hammond. They bring back what their top four rushers, I believe, from last year. And here's why we may not know who's going to be the next guy. The year before, Bennett had, well, maybe we did know a little bit. Bennett had 19 catches for and still three TDs and averaged almost 21 yards a catch. So maybe we knew he was going to be that same guy. He didn't take a huge leap like what Jalen Robinette did this last year, where he had a lot more passes, a lot more touchdowns because he was an elite NFL receiver. I don't know if there's anyone else coming back. Like, they bring back their key defenders. I think this is the most one of the most simple ones. And Marcus Bennett has to be the guy they need to replace the most.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not to say that they're not losing other contributors. I did consider maybe Brody Bagnell because he was kind of a key part of their run-stopping ability last
Of
year.
course.
And they do lose a lot on the back end of their defense as well. But the back end of their defense has been kind of shaky off and on for the last couple of years anyway.
Yeah, and so it's like, eh.
So when I look at the parts of the team that were actually most effective in the last couple of years, that to me is where Bennett kind of becomes the guy that is hardest to replace.
I'm gonna make a prediction here.
Okay.
Not that who it's going to be, but there's gonna be a receiver that's going to be not put up like Robinette numbers, but something close, because I think Donald Hammond's a better pass thrower than than Isaiah Sanders, like Worthman or other guys. So I think there could be a guy who I'm trying to look up right now what he put up Robinette. He didn't he have like 60 catches 2 years ago?
It was something like that. Yeah, I don't have
Also, I
the
double
tab
checked.
in front of me
So
right
I
now.
know his average was high. I'm trying to see if I can find it really quick without burning through the podcast tape here. But I do think, yes, he had, well, only 35 catches, but he had almost 1,000 yards. I'm going to bet there's a receiver be somewhat close to that, those numbers.
Interesting.
Which would be slightly more than what was put up last year by Bennett.
I guess we'll have to find out.
So what I'm saying is like maybe 30 for 700. That doesn't – well, I don't know how – maybe I'm not making a reach if I look historically, but I'm going to go out on the limb a little bit and say that's – I think that's what the top receiver will be. Good. You seem to be questioning that.
No, I mean, I think that's a pretty bold prediction.
Hey, I have them going 10-3, so I got to be
that's
bold.
True. So that's just doubling down then is what you're saying.
A little bit, but I do think Hammond's a – here's okay, here's another reason why. It's not just me thinking they'll be great. They have all their running backs back. They have – I think Hammond's a really good quarterback. I think we both agree on. I believe Mostert line is back. And so they can run even more – play action more kind of they'll run a lot, but I'm thinking more teams will be more focused on the run itself because of who they're coming back and how good the running game will be, not just because the system but also talent. And so it'll make more guys do like one-on-one to these receivers, so
that makes sense.
So that's where I'm going with. So let's go to Boise State, who is losing a lot of players.
I mean, would it be too on the nose to say Brett Rippon?
I think yes, only because maybe we'll pick two different ones. let me start off with this. Running back, while there's concern, is probably the least concerning key player they lost in Alexander Mattison, because every year they seem to get a guy who comes in right away and does just fine. And people got on me for McNichols a couple years ago, like, oh, who's gonna replace him? I'm like, well, I said this before, probably they'll be fine. It'll probably take 2 years to find an elite running back, but there's not going to be a huge downtick in who's going to run the ball.
So then maybe we need to break it down into two parts, where with Boise State in particular, you have hardest to replace, and then you have hardest to replace, comma, non-Rippon edition.
Okay, if we started Rippon, because there's a four-team quarterback battle, could be, Brinkemeyer, right?
Bachmeyer,
that's close. Sorry, I was thinking of that TV show that's on IFC with the baseball one, that guy, which I think is, but he might be starter. They have guys coming back. They have multiple guys who've been out there but nobody's played. Whoever's going to play is going to be like basically a brand new quarterback. And if they end up going with like a true freshman, oh boy, going up against Florida State week one, I think overall that's the biggest one to replace, because they haven't had a quarterback situation in multiple years. But yet, if we look at really quick what they did with Montel Cozart, there's reason to be concerned that the quarterback situation has a chance to not be handled as smoothly as it should be or could be.
I mean, I think that I would disagree, if only because we've seen Boise State do this before.
True.
With Kellen Moore. And even if, you know, Grant Hedrick and Joe Southwick weren't necessarily in the same caliber of quarterback as Kellen Moore.
Well, nobody is. That's impossible almost to say.
And so I think that whoever steps up, yeah, maybe there will be some rough patches throughout the fall, but I kind of think that whoever emerges in the long run is going to be fine.
I know, but we're talking next year.
Yeah. But I know, I'm talking next year too. I think it might be kind of uneven, but it's not like they're going in without a killer defense to help bail them out.
Oh, no.
And it's not like they're going out with, you know, like, as you mentioned, a running back who's probably going to step up and run for 1,000 yards. And, you know, at least, what, three or four receivers who could easily step up and combine for, like, I don't know, a 60-65% catch rate in, a, you know, 1,500 yards or whatever like that. Yeah, I think they'll ultimately be fine whoever they end up choosing.
Well, they typically almost all of them, but also they also lose their top two receivers, at least, A.J. Richardson. Who's that? Cedric Wilson, but Sean Monster.
Sean Monster.
Sorry, not Wilson. He's last year. C.G. Thompson will probably be their main guy. But here's the thing. Like, we'll say it until everybody's like, oh, you like Boise State. They're the best team ever. You always just love them. Well, when they win a minimum of 9 games every year, are almost always competing for the conference championship and winning, you're going to give them some leeway if they lose their top two pass catchers, top running back, top 4-year starter quarterback. You're going to give them the leeway even losing all that talent, right? And so that's why we're going to say, that's your reasoning, most likely, I'm assuming. They'll be fine at quarterback. Might be a little rough in the first couple games just because it's a new guy. Running game, they'll be fine with Robert Mahone or whoever's going to take the ball running in a situation. Andrew Van Buren, somebody. Interesting fact, Brett Rippon was number two rusher last year with 85 attempts. So, which goes to our point in the combine talk, Madison carries the ball as much as possible with 302 carries. So who would be your non-Rippon? Like, who would be like, okay, if it's not Brett Rippon, and we know running back's probably going to be fine, receiver probably going to be fine, especially if like Hightower and stuff are returning and doing what they do. Is a defender that you want to look at that way? Of who might
Yeah, I
be?
mean, I think for me, if you're not talking about Rippon, the answer is pretty clear, and it's Tyler Horton.
You mean, excuse me, Mr. Playmaker Tyler Horton, who gets touchdowns?
Exactly.
Oh,
Because finding a number one corner is really hard to do. Almost as hard as finding, you know, a blue chip quarterback. And it's not to say again that Boise State doesn't have people who could step up and fill that void. You know, if Avery Williams is back to 100% playing well, he could definitely be that caliber of corner. And we saw glimpses, you know, from guys like Jalen Walker last year as well. But when you're considering the experience that Horton is taking with him to the next level, that to me is where it becomes really difficult to replace. You know, that's another instance where no matter who steps in, you know, there might be some rough patches there as well, which is not to say that it won't get better eventually, but there's going to be a learning curve for replacing Rippon and replacing someone like Horton.
And also to consider, Horton was, I think, wasn't he considered for a defensive player of the year despite missing games as well?
I mean, if he wasn't, he probably should have been.
Yeah, I think, I know he wouldn't win it, but we made him as a selection for our staff to pick, and he was pretty close, or not close, but he earned a couple votes. Also, I'll go with the player. I know Horton's a pretty big deal because you're right. If you get a shutdown corner, you could take away like a third of the field, half the field, quarter of the field, whatever type of defense you're playing. That's very valuable. But I also say Jabril Frazier's a pretty big loss as well. Because he got the quarterback, he got the line of scrimmage, he played what, basically a 4-year starter just about. He played what, 9 games his first year. He had, I think, what, 30 career TFLs. I know they'll have guys to come in, but he would get to the backfield and disrupt plays like every single play is back there. And so I think he could be one of the biggest defenders as well to replace because, like I said, if you can, well, everything I mentioned, it's pretty simple to say. He may not have the dynamics of what Horton can do, where, like we mentioned, the pick sixes, take away the field, they don't throw his way. Those are kind of harder to see numerically or tangibly if he has only a game where it's 3 tackles and a pass breakup. That's it, because they don't throw the ball his way ever. Yeah. But I think Frazier could be a big loss as well. But I think Boise's more equipped to have a better up front than they do secondary, just looking over the past, 4 to 7 years. So he'd be like my guy to look out for. It's like, hey, who's going to replace him? Because he had 2 years with Van Der Esch a lot the year before, then other guys as well. Then this past year, he played just as well. Some people thought he might be a tad better, or who knows, number wise, because people were keying in on Van Der Esch last season. But he's probably my most important defender they're missing for next year.
All right, so what about Colorado State then?
I saw some of our comments. Did you see some of our comments on Twitter about this?
I did.
One person said, "I need to get a clarification. Is it Obi now? What's he doing with Johnson? Is he name change? Did you see that?"
Well, Olabisi Johnson moved on, did he not?
No, but that's what I'm saying. He's a guy we're going to be missing next year.
Yeah,
Olabisi or BC Johnson. That's what I'm saying. What's his name called now? What's the deal?
Well, I'm assuming BC is just a shortening of Olabisi.
I understand that, yes. I just mean, I was doing some research for other stuff. I'm like, why is he all of a sudden being named BC instead? Was that something we missed this year?
I don't know.
Maybe?
Maybe, I don't know.
But my point with him, people were mentioning him as the most difficult player to replace, like more so than, you know, Preston Williams.
Yeah, that's a funny one, isn't it?
I don't think that's accurate at all, right?
I mean, the only reason I wouldn't say it's either of those guys is because, and we've talked about this a little bit in weeks past, like I am fairly optimistic about the guys they have coming up behind them. And when I look back at the responses, you know, I see Olabisi Johnson, but I did see a couple people also mention Josh Watson. And to me, that is definitely this is another instance where it's probably an easy choice. Because even though the Rams defense wasn't any great shakes last year, you know, there was no question he was kind of the heart and soul of that defense. You know, team's leading tackler, team's leading tackle for loss guy, you know, definite run stuffer, and could play a little bit against the pass as well. So, you know, it's an instance where, unlike Air Force and Boise, that, you know, Colorado State in some sense, this is kind of starting over, or at least on defense, you know, they had a chance to break in some, you know, promising young athletes on the defensive side of the ball in particular. But finding someone to fill that void in the middle of the defense is going to be tough.
especially since during spring practice right now, their coach is like, we can't tackle. We need to learn how to tackle better.
Not
and,
great.
No, and if you're losing your best defender, who is really, really good and everywhere in the field, I agree. He's their biggest loss because they're going to be fine off. Well, I won't say fine, but relatively speaking, yes, you lost Presto Williams, who is amazing. Johnson does great things. But they have the guy coming in from, shoot, it was Auburn, the wide receiver.
Yeah.
And you wrote a piece on who's going to be the breakout wide receiver for the Rams. So there's not going to be an issue if who's going to be playing for them, a receiver. Quarterback will be fine. When Colin Hill will be ready to go. We'll see about running back. But as for about as a defense it is, it's got to be him. And I don't know who's going to step up because it could be – I'm pretty sure it's like an open competition. I think you and I could go check out the Rams roster and say, hey, can you get a spot for us maybe? Because they need anybody who can do anything maybe, which not saying would be helpful, but point is they're looking for anybody and anything. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going with. So let's go to your Fresno State Bulldogs.
Okay.
We have Marcus McMarion gone. Keyshawn Johnson gone. Jeffrey Allison gone. What other big name players am I missing?
Well, let's see. Mike Bell.
That's right.
Mike Bell. George Hellmuth.
George Hellmuth.
Christian Kronk, the keep left
him
tackle.
Keep him coming.
James Bailey, Tank yeah. Kelly. I could keep going with a lot of different players. Unlike the first three, this one's really hard, isn't it?
It is because, yeah, no, it is overall because its defense was elite and amazing. Offense was well above average. I don't know who to pick. I typically go to quarterback because it's easy. But I don't know. They have a good running back coming back, so it's not going to like hinder them that much. Isn't also Rice gone too, tight end, Jared Rice? Or is he back?
No, he's back.
Oh, good. Phew. Okay, you got one guy out there who's returning to play an offense. Who's your pick? I still debated over this. So I'm not entirely sure.
See, I went with Keyshawn Johnson just because, you know, that's a guy who has been starting through thick and thin for this team over the last few years. And kind of like Marcus Bennett, you know, he's a guy who's emblematic of a really big question that's going to have to get resolved throughout spring ball, throughout fall camp and things like that. But, you know, unlike Bennett, you know, you're talking about a guy who had 130 targets last year, which was almost twice as many as Rice, who was the second leading targeted receiver. You know, 95 catches, over 1,300 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's going to be really difficult for one guy to replace. And he's not even the only receiver of note that's gone for this year's Bulldogs. You know, Jameer Jordan's also gone. Micaiah Quick's also gone. You know, Justin Allen's gone. Like, a lot of people are going to have to step up and try to replace that production, even if it's not one guy stepping up to replace that production. So while you could basically say the same thing at a lot of different positions, like all three of the linebackers are getting replaced this year. You know, the quarterback's getting replaced. So it's not like that's the only big question. But for me, considering just like all that Keyshawn Johnson's been able to do over the years, that is kind of what I defaulted through throughout this exercise, is like the guy who has the most experience, who has the most production. And, you know, so I kind of defaulted toward that in the long run.
Well, I guess it's lame to say the same one, but he had that catch streak that was one of the best ever in college football. Like almost about every game of his career, essentially, he had a catch.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much something like that. And so you lose that type of talent. Because at quarterback, here's the thing, quarterback McMarion, we know what Tedford, whatever you can want to say about his quarterback prowess, he can hype guys up to get higher picks in the draft. But he's a pretty good quarterback coach. He coaches everything. Running backs is what he's most known for, but that's not a concern this year. I may say Jeff Allison. He was the best defender in the conference. Actually, that's your biggest loss.
No, like I said, I think you can make a pretty convincing argument for any number of guys.
And because they're still going to be pretty good next year. So there's, I guess, and also I think didn't they lose another wide receiver as well, or is it not just Johnson? Right, it's
That's what I'm saying. They lost like three or four wide receivers.
I don't offhand. It's been a while. Not Jared Rice. He's number two. But they lost multiple guys. So maybe, can I just say the Fresno group? Because there it is. Jameer Jordan's gone as well.
Allow it.
Oh, good. Thank you. I appreciate you allowing me. I'll say the wide receiver group overall. Because okay. Combo, like I mentioned, quarterback, wide receivers, couple guys out there. I'll go wide receiver group is the biggest position of need for next year. I know so it's then, lame, but come on, that's okay, right?
So then would you also say the same thing about Hawaii?
Probably. John Ursua is gone. And he – I'll say – is it wrong for me to say he was the best receiver in the conference last year?
No, I think he's got a pretty good argument for
better
that.
Better than Preston Williams, better than Keyshawn Johnson. I get a lot of it was due to the offense they ran. But he – I think he'll be a really, really good NFL guy.
Like, well, it wasn't just the offense that they ran. It was also the role that he had within it.
Yeah. He was the guy, like, even last year. Every year he played, he's been in a, one of – like, yeah, last year, 2017, he only played a couple games half the season because he had tore his knee. Like, even as a freshman, freshman, 53 catches and a couple – three touchdowns, like four catches a game, like a key contributor on a really bad team.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say – I'm going to go say John Ursua overall – however, we could anybody could counter that and say, well, they're going to do the same offense and they'll throw it to whoever else out there who can catch the ball just because that's what they do. Because they have JoJo Ward coming back. Is Cedric Bird coming back as well?
Yes, he is.
So you have him coming back, but he was like Marcus Armstrong Brown who had 50 catches. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I would say as for an individual talent, him, but also the receiving group is probably going to be just fine.
And see, that's why I ultimately didn't settle upon Ursua, and that's why I chose Jelani Tavai instead.
That's a good pick.
Because even though he wasn't 100% throughout last year, you know, that is, you know, I don't know if it's a perfect comparison, but for me, Hawaii replacing Tavai this year is kind of like Boise State having to replace Leighton Vander Esch a couple years ago.
You think so? That big?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's not a perfect comparison, but... And this is not to say that Hawaii's defense is in the same league that Boise State's been in the last couple of years, but because they've had so much trouble kind of getting traction on that side of the ball, having a dynamic playmaker like Tavai has been a net positive for them. And so when you're losing a guy who's proven to be like a tackle for loss machine, you know, they did a little bit better job of getting that from the defense overall last year, but having that kind of one star in the middle of the defense like Tavai has been, I guess it would be a little bit like your argument for Jeffrey Allison as being very important to replacing very important to replace for the Bulldogs. I kind of see it the same way.
Yeah, because it's not like, also the Hawaii defense wasn't that great, and so it's also maybe more so the Colorado State pick as well.
Yeah.
Because Hawaii's defense gave a lot of points, wasn't good all the time, and now they lose their best defender. And their defense, and there's nobody around him that we can pinpoint right now, oh, this guy's going to take over for that linebacker position.
Exactly.
All right, so we've got alphabetical order. So we got the F, G, H, is it?
It is Nevada.
I always forget Nevada, New Mexico for some reason. So it's Nevada. One of our good friends, I think it was a fake mummy, Matt Mummy, is that who tweeted us saying Malik Reed was their biggest loss perhaps? Is that are you in agreement with that?
Actually, no.
Ooh, why not?
Because we saw how the offense struggled without Ty Ganji last year.
Yeah.
And while I think Nevada can be confident in the options that they have, we've also seen in the last couple of years that the offense really kind of fell flat when he wasn't available. You know, we saw early in 2017 when they swapped him out with David Cornwall and, you know, Kamen Cureton. Neither of the guys were very effective.
That,
and by the time
well.
He got back, you know, that was when the offense really started hitting its stride. And we saw it a little bit last year when Christian Solano was under center. And maybe granted, some of that has to do with the fact that Solano had to face, I don't know, the best defense in the conference in Fresno State. But if he can do a little bit better, maybe I'll be proven wrong in the long run. But to me, that's kind of the most pressing question is, you know, we know that Ty Ganji can move that offense when he's under center. But now that he's gone, who's going to step up to replace him? So while, you know, Malik Reed is definitely a viable answer, I think offense is really what made this team go in the last 2 years. And so I'm very interested to see how they resolve that.
You're absolutely correct. I don't know. It's the offense. I hopefully with the offense, what they want to do when passing the ball and everything that maybe they could not, maybe not do what Hawaii did, but if it's a guy they trust and throw the ball, they'll be fine. But I don't know. You're right with them. Plus, it also gives me hesitance about the coaching decision. Like, oh, let's switch this guy, put this guy after one bad game. Kind of like what Mike Bobo does a little bit. Even me, I mentioned Brian Harsin, shovel pass quarterback when they split time with Boise State, Montel Cozart. There we go. That his questioning or like his decision making skills, like, are you sick of the guy? Because he doesn't have the experienced guy there anymore. And then they also lose, like you mentioned, they lose McLean Mannix is gone. They lost guys to transfer. They lost offense and defense as well, but they lost offensive guys. But then again, they have Tua Tua there to run the ball. So maybe he could take some heat off whoever's their quarterback. But I don't know. The defense, Nevada's defense was, they were okay last year. So
no, I mean, they were pretty good, especially by the end of last year.
Yeah, that's why maybe I might agree with Malik Reed.
And I mean, because I think you can make the argument either way, but the thing on the defensive end of the ball is that Reed is far from the only piece that they're missing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not losing just him. They're also losing, you know, two safeties in Asani Rufus and Damian Baper. They're also losing Corey Rush. You know, they're losing Jairus McDade. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess it just kind of depends on your preference. I wouldn't complain either way, because Malik Reed has been, kind of like Yanji has been, mm-hmm. one of the more dynamic player makers in the conference over the last couple of years.
No, you're right. I'd say both are acceptable answers, right?
Yeah.
We'll go with both are fine.
It's just, it just depends on your preference, pretty much all it is. All
right. New Mexico, is it just a pass? Is there a player good enough leaving the team we need to discuss?
Well, yeah. Yeah, there is. I mean, we joke about New Mexico and the fact that they have a lot to replace while they're also kind of starting over. But when you lose someone like Marcus Hayes,
mm-hmm. yeah,
to a Power 5 team, no less, you know, that I think stings quite a bit, especially since you're talking about a guy who put up a freshman All-American kind of performance last mm-hmm. year and was really a bright spot that, had he stuck around, would have been something for the Lobos to build upon. But, you know, he's kind of emblematic of something. I don't know how you would define it, but something is significantly wrong in Albuquerque right now.
That's an understatement of the century.
Because you basically, at this point, you're looking for individual performances that, you know, that stood out as being a way to answer this question. So, I mean, I think you could make a decent case for Rashawn Epting too. Mm-hmm. Just because he was the other kind of big playmaker on that offense, on that defense rather, last year, and he's gone too. So if I had to answer the question, I would say Hayes, but I would also say that Epting has a pretty strong argument there too.
I'd probably go with Delane Hart Johnson. Five touchdown, leading receiver, 33 catches for that run based offense. He's their best receiver right now. They have who is it? Ansali Uma coming back, I believe, but he only had like 16 catches. Mm-hmm. But I'd say Johnson, because we've seen all those great catches he can make in the end zone, those leaping catches, like some one-handers that didn't count. But mm-hmm. I think he could be – it's weird. It's hard to say receiver. It's like the Air Force. We chose receiver, but they're also like a heavy run offense. But then again, when your run offense clicks and then you can suck somebody in and you have a talent of Delane Hart Johnson or any team that in that type of system, like an Air Force or whoever does a run-based and passes – what, 25? I know New Mexico wants to throw a bit more, but I would go with him, and because he also missed, I think he missed that Wyoming game as well, or had no catches in the Wyoming game, I should say. But overall, the finale, but I'd say him, because relatively speaking of what they've been wanting to do, because they do want to pass the ball more, he actually made it worthwhile for them, and he's gone. So I'd go with him for an offensive player.
No, I mean, I think that makes sense, because like we talked about a minute ago with Malik Reed, I think the thing with Marcus Hayes and Epting is they aren't the only ones leaving on the defensive side of the ball. Like, did you realize that New Mexico is losing their top 8 tacklers from last year?
So you're telling me they're going 0-12?
I'm telling you they have a lot of work to do on the defensive side of the ball, which, you know, maybe it dims the argument for one guy on the defense replacing being really tough to replace, because when you're replacing that much production on the defensive side of the ball, maybe it makes it hard to replace everybody. So maybe that's a point in favor of Hart Johnson. I don't know.
Let's move on to the next team, because there's nothing else to talk about New Mexico without me getting angry and upset about. Oh, you did hear about them denying any like FOIA or grammar request about transfers to the Albuquerque Journal.
I did, and that's disappointing.
It's also probably illegal because they're a state school, right?
Yes.
And it's for transfers leaving the program. Does that mean I could ask about other things? Because we do know they'd like to delete emails willy-nilly and not save anything up. So, but that's another podcast for another day. Or if you really want to dig into our archives, I chatted with Daniel Libet from nmfishbowl.com months ago about the Bob Davie. I have to use the words alleged, covering up crimes, getting in fights, breaking people's hands, grabbing people's face masks, and doing other shady things. So go find that one. Have a good listen, I guess. I don't know. Next, if I'm trying to do it ahead, San Diego State, right? Is that where we're
That
headed
is
to? All
correct.
right, sorry. My alphabet is great, you know. I always have this issue when I type the teams out and I'm doing the list alphabetical. I for some reason like Nevada, New Mexico. I forget like one team. Like what team am I missing here? It happens, right? Does it happen to you ever, or is it just me?
Well, no, it happens to me every once in a while.
Good, every once in a while. So San Diego State. Can I make my joke answer of Christian Chapman?
You can, because I was thinking the same thing for a while. For a while, yeah. Well, no, and it's not. And I mean,
Sorry.
we joke, but Christian Chapman was a pretty effective quarterback during his time as a starter.
Yeah, he didn't turn the ball over. He had a handful of great drives, especially I always go back to that Wyoming 90-plus drive touchdown to in that
I mean,
game
he
there.
was a 3-year starter who won at least he won a conference title.
He
That's
did
not nothing to
no.
replace, you know?
And he was more than a guy. I guess my everybody knows my not beef, but my only concerns like we talked about the tight end. NFL draft pick, you don't give him the ball enough. Stuff like that. But it's also not in their offense. But he, I don't want to say game managers, people get pissy about that, but that's kind of what he was a little bit. But he could make drives when asked. Like I said, he wasn't the guy who they were going to rely on him to throw it for 35 times a game because they didn't need him to do that. But I think, I know, but being 100% serious now, they brought in a JUCO quarterback because they don't trust Ryan Agnew, even though Rocky Long says, oh, he's our starter, but we're going to bring in some competition to push him. This is going to be very important because Juwan Washington's back. They'll be fine. Yes, Tyler Romer's gone. Offensive line lose a couple players. That'll be a little concern. But in all seriousness, if they have quarterback issues, like sort of last year, they went back and forth between Agnew and Chapman. If Agnew can't win this job after being this guy, they wanted him to be the starter for years and can't do it, this team, you can't hand the ball off 95% of the time and expect to win and then rely on your defense to make plays. So, like, serious answer could be Christian Chapman because of. People will realize, like maybe even me myself, like, well, maybe he was a really good quarterback and Will should have got more respect because this guy completes 40% of his passes, can't throw downfield, and turns the ball over every 15th pass.
So it's really, I think when I was thinking about this question with regards to the Aztecs, this was the most difficult choice because I feel like of any of the teams in the Mountain West, you could make an argument for maybe the most different players. Like we talked about Chapman. I think maybe you could make a case for Ryan Pope, the left tackle, especially since the Aztecs are kind of changing up what they're doing on offense, and maybe that left tackle position becomes important for different reasons than we've been accustomed to in the last couple of years. Maybe you make an argument for someone like Ronny Lakalaka, who was a 3-year starter at linebacker and an effective pass rusher and things like that.
Or
For
Noble Hall,
me,
Parker Baldwin, those are
Noble Hall,
the, yeah,
exactly.
those guys.
For me, I eventually settled upon Parker Baldwin because with the defense that the Aztecs run, oddly enough, Parker Baldwin runs that from that Aztec position, which is, is it the most important component of that defense? I think so. I think that having someone effective back there, and especially someone who was as experienced as Baldwin was back there, really made that whole defense go. And the only guy who had more tackles than him last year was Kaiva Tizino. Obviously he's coming back, and that's a credit to this year's Aztecs team. And I think that, it's less a question of can they replace him, because I think that recent history suggests that you should give someone like Dwayne Johnson Jr. or whoever ends up stepping into that starting role during spring ball to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I think that for me, just having someone who can hold that position down and be effective doing it is, maybe the toughest thing to replace, maybe even tougher than a quarterback.
Yeah, because especially that defense, it's not he plays sort of like the linebacker slash DB essentially, so he has to have that size to be able to get the running back, play blitz that position, and the speed to cover guys when he's out in coverage or even zone. So That you might be right, because as for what the position entails, what you need to do, like I said, it could be as difficult as a QB or something. All right, so what's next? San Jose State, is it just Josh Oliver, right?
I mean, I settled upon Oliver, because
Settled.
I
I
think
like that
that,
word. Settled upon Oliver.
well, because I think that the obvious argument is he was basically the one reliable target that whoever was under center for the Spartans last year had. And, while I think there's, and I've written about this during the offseason last month, that I like the pieces that they have coming back, and I like their ability to take a step forward as an offense. But I don't think there's any question that losing an NFL caliber tight end does make a difference. I think maybe you can make an argument for Dakari Monroe.
Or even Jamal Scott too, maybe.
Because I mean, the argument for Monroe is kind of like we talked about with Tyler Horton earlier. Like finding a number one quarterback is, or cornerback rather, is really hard to do. But for me, I feel like, with where San Jose State has been and where it's going, that finding a replacement for Oliver, finding that weapon in the middle of the field is going to be a really important task for them.
And they might, maybe not. Okay, maybe it's not. I guess replacing that specific position, specific talent, a player will be tough. But like you said, I do agree. Like they're, if they get their quarterback going, position going, because they finally settled on who they're going to have back out there, by bounced around by a couple of guys. Tyler Nevin's going to be back. They may be able to. No, I think I won't say may. They will find production to replace what Oliver did. It just won't be like, it won't be able to point to, hey, this guy did it or that guy did it. It'll be 2 to 4 players that overall increase their numbers, plus on top of what Oliver did, I'm thinking. So that's
Exactly.
where I guess we also get our buddy, was it Boogie Roberts, who was first team all conference by us. He's a pretty big loss.
That's true.
Could be an NFL player potentially. Was he a defensive tackle? So there's a couple of guys, but Oliver's just the clear, obvious answer, right?
I think so, yeah.
Because like I said, if he's an NFL guy on a team that won a couple games, it's hard to replace. And so yeah. So next we have UNLV.
UNLV.
UNLV. Not Tony Sanchez, because he's going to be back, right? He's not going anywhere.
Well, that means not a player either.
I guess that is the obvious piece. Actually, I think I skipped over UNLV, so you go first. I think about it. I think it's one of the teams I'm writing down I forgot to put on there.
Wow, disrespect.
I'm sorry. Is it just Lexington? It's wait, is Lexington Thomas back?
No, he's not.
Okay, I'll go with him. I'm sorry, I'm going through a list. I did this last minute. I was writing stuff down. I was like, oh, okay, Rogers is back. This guy's back. Okay, I'll go Lexington Thomas. I apologize, Rebel fans. Earn my respect. Can I say that? Can I go that route and be mean and say it's on you, not me, because your team underachieved last year?
You go down that route and see how well it works.
But it is. You can say yes or no for Lexington Thomas, because Charles Williams, they have a couple of, what's his name? Oh shoot! See, I'm forgetting everyone's names now. Xavier, am I
Xavier Campbell.
Campbell? Sorry, I want to say something weird. So you're not helping me out, but just let me sit out here, Matt. But it's okay. It's my fault for missing a team. Running back position probably fine, but as for pure production, when Lexington Thomas gets a boot in his butt, he actually can play pretty well. So I'm gonna say him 1,000 yards. That's a pretty big loss, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, but I think that,
That was
with the guys they
brutal.
have coming back, I
It'll
feel
be fine.
okay about Thomas being gone.
Me too. Biggest name loss, probably.
Biggest name loss, but I mean, as far as the biggest loss period, for me, I kind of went off the board a little bit, and I went with Nathan Jacobson, because you're talking about that rare kind of offensive lineman who I think he started at least 50 games for UNLV.
That's good.
He moved from left tackle to right tackle, I believe, during the season last year. But having that kind of experience on the offensive line is going to be really critical, because we know what this offense wants to do going forward. And while they do have talent coming up, that they've recruited in the last couple of years, like namely Justice Oluwaseyin, I feel like that, I kind of like we talked about with who was it? Like Parker Baldwin, for instance. That it's less a matter of who's going to replace him as much as having just pretty significant shoes to fill.
I'll go with a legit answer. Mike Hughes will be a pretty big loss for them. Second team all conference on the defensive line for what he could do for them, because their
Well,
defense.
he was gone last year.
Wait, am I looking the wrong? Oh, I'm terrible. I should
The
stop talking for you another.
disrespect.
No, what I did. No, okay. You want to know what I did? I'll be honest right here. I'm sorry. I'm going through. I'm pulling up, I have the all conference teams in front of me just because, oh, here's maybe a player missed or seniors to also discuss. I scroll through and inadvertently scroll to 2017. I'll still say it, he's a big loss for next year because they missed him last year. Oh man, Rebel fans, you can do what you want to me.
At Jeremy Moss on Twitter.
Good luck spelling it. Go ahead. No, okay. I am sorry. This is embarrassing and not what I should be doing here, apparently, today.
Nah, it's all right. Should we just move on to Utah State?
Go for it. Utah State, they have a lot of guys gone, right?
They do bring back Jordan. They kind of do, yeah.
They lose Darwin Thompson. They lose, as we mentioned, tight end Dax Raymond, who I don't think that is their biggest loss for the year. Because
so why don't we start with you this time? Who do you think is?
I'd say the running back, Darwin Thompson. Because how many – what did we say the past couple of years about this team? Who's running the ball? Who's – they don't have a running game. They have – what's his name with – oh, shoot, with the Packers, who got drafted seventh round, who was injured.
You're talking about Kerwin Williams?
No, not Kerwin Williams. 2 years
Robert
ago.
Robert Turbin?
No, not Robert Turbin. You're naming all the wrong ones. Ah, what's his name? I'm – whatever. I apologize. I'm not – I'm just moving forward because I'm spacing on the guy.
LaJuan Hunt? It's a Sunday.
Is it LaJuan Hunt? Is that who it is?
Oh, yes.
Good. I got it right. I pulled that name out. No. But no, I was just thinking of the name. But the running back position, yes, they have Gerald Bright coming in. But Darwin Thompson, JUCO transfer, came out of nowhere. And we've always said the running game has been the issue for Utah State the past couple years since those two other guys you mentioned, Turbin, Thompson, all those guys out there who have made NFL careers for themselves. Thompson, 1,000 yards, 14 TDs. He came on more later than Gerald Bright, who nearly had identical numbers, was about 200 yards fewer, and still had double-digit touchdowns. So maybe it could be the scenario where, like UNLV, the player itself, the big-name player is gone, but they have talent around him. But with Utah State's running game the past couple of years, new head coach, which we'll see how that plays into this, I don't know. I would say it could be Thompson just because he solidified as the main running back late in the year, and so Utah State hasn't had it in a long time. So I want to go with him because I'm going to go with him for being a bigger loss because I think part of the reason the offense went so well, those two backs almost combined for 2,000 yards.
I mean, I think that's a fair argument. And not just because Darwin Thompson's really effective running the football, but he was a very important piece catching the ball at the backfield as well. So finding someone in their rebuild rotation who can do the same thing is going to be really important. I kind of went a different direction, though, and you know, maybe I feel like I'm contradicting myself considering some of the other things we talked about, but I was thinking about the playmakers that they're losing on defense.
Yeah.
And to me, it seems really important that they're losing someone like Jontrell Rockmore.
Rockmore?
Yeah.
He's awesome. Sad to see him go.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it's kind of like they're also losing Gage Ferguson, too, and they're also losing Aaron Wade. All three of those guys saw a lot of playing time at safety last year. So I feel like I'm kind of undercutting myself a little bit now that I'm saying it out loud.
No, he made big plays because they – no, don't undersell yourself. If you think that's a guy, go with that being your guy. It's they lose a lot of players on defense, so you can't just say defense, but you kind of narrow it down. But
and I think it's because, like, especially last year, he was a guy who was really contributing both in defending the pass and defending against the run. He had 8.5 tackles for loss and 3 interceptions. You know, that's the kind of rare production that is, as far as safeties go, it's not every safety in the conference that could do something like that.
No, but also what's helpful, this is their another safety 2 years ago where they have got – they've had – Utah State's known for putting guys in safety in NFL.
Yeah.
So, but they also seem to, we're fine. We're replacing you with you, and you're going to do just fine this year. It's just the name change, but the production can nearly be the same. Like, look at who was it in 2017? They had their Jalen Davis.
Mm-hmm.
They have him out there. The BYU game's the biggest one. He had three TDs, 5 picks.
And Dallin Lovett, let's not forget.
Yeah, and Dallin Lovett, too, yeah. But, like, Rockamore back there, 3 picks as well. No, it's fine to say what. It's, if you think that's your big position, but it's fine. Because here's why their defense will be okay, where you can say, maybe it's not. Is that they bring back Tippa, they bring back Woodward, they bring back all these guys, and their defensive coach in Gary Anderson returns to town.
Yeah.
Not to say undersell at all, but I mean, there's reasons where they'll probably be okay. But if it's a big loss, come on.
It's very similar to what we talked about earlier with Boise State, I think, in that
pick.
Yeah, because like Tyler Horton might get replaced by Walker or by Avery Williams or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rockmore might get replaced by someone like Chase Nelson or Braxton Gunther. But there's still a lot left for those new guys stepping up to prove.
Somebody mentioned Quinn Ficklin, starting center.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's a big deal. He's center's a really big position, so somebody mentioned that. But let's go to Wyoming, and this is our final team, right?
Yes.
Good. I'm making sure my math is adding up tonight as we're getting to our typical hour spot. Can I just say defense?
The whole defense?
Almost like Carl
I mean,
Granderson.
they got guys coming back.
They do. They got Logan Wilson coming back, like Carl Granderson. Andrew Windward's gone. Windward, excuse me. Epps is gone. What's his name? Transferred to a P5 school. Oh shoot. You know what I'm talking about, right? Everybody knows what I'm saying. Just yelled at me, right?
Oh man,
Yost
did I miss that?
Gasofin? I can never say his name too. That's also on me.
Are you talking about Johanna Gaifan?
Johanna Gaifin, yeah, sorry, that's it, yeah. He trained.
I thought he was moving on to the NFL.
No, he ended up transferring.
Oh, he did.
I want to double check that. Maybe he's the NFL, but he's not. Regardless, he's not back. Oh, no, you are correct. No, he is going to the NFL. He had interest from Power Five schools. That's what it was.
Ah, okay.
But regardless, he's gone, right? He's not
Yes.
coming back to play defense.
He is
And
not.
so that's why defense is kind of my default, what to say for them. However,
Well, if you have to choose one, though,
I know.
who's it going to be?
I'm pretty sure you're going with offense, right?
Actually, no.
You're not going with Nico Evans?
No, I was
Ooh.
actually going to say I'm very surprised that you are giving him more consideration, considering how much you love offense and how much you hate defense.
Oh, that's gonna be a thing forever.
No.
I know for my pick, I like Carl Granderson as a pretty big loss.
No, that's fair because
Because
finding good pass rushers is hard to do.
and also taking a defensive handoff for a touchdown is hard to do as well.
That too.
I know yes, we know because I go back to that New Mexico State game last year where the announcers were giving Wyoming pretty good credit like this, like six or seven guys on this team. Defensive starting unit will be in the NFL, and that's probably the case. But for what for Granderson can do, like he has the knack to get to the quarterback, to knock people down, and not set but make plays. He has his hands up on plays. Like I joked about the handoff, he's had multiple fumble strip sacks in the backfield. And it's not just making the play, it's making the play and doing something bigger to help your team out. Not just knocking the ball down, knocking it down, maybe a guy catches it for interception, or it's something, it's just a multiple type play he can do. Oh, I sacked the quarterback. That's amazing. But I could sack and strip the ball, and my teammate gets it and falls on, or I take the ball myself. He is a multiple type of defender where he can do all those things. So that's why I'd go with him. But there's a lot of guys that the defense probably will be okay. But then again, they lose their DC. Hazleton's gone, so that's an issue as well. So, but yeah, I say Granderson. I say second would be, I guess, the most impactful, honestly, overall would be Nico Evans because their running game and quarterback play outside of him, ooh, brutal. But who do you got? Who are you taking?
No, I would say Wingard.
Ooh, Wingard. Why is that?
And to me, he's kind of in that same class as someone like Horton or Baldwin or someone who's been a real part of the resurgence of the program. You know, basically from day one, you know, he's a guy who started, what, 4 years?
I think so.
That kind of experience is really hard to replace. So while, you know, you might have confidence that Wyoming can figure things out, because they're replacing so many guys, you know, I feel like this might be maybe the one exception where, you know, it's going to be really hard to find another Andrew Wingard.
Well, clearly a guy who's Mountain West consideration what he can do. That's a good list. That's no, we're good. I guess we don't need to. We mentioned no Evans, but if we do honorable mention, that'd probably be him. So,
Yeah.
but mainly because defense should be okay, right? There's not because who else they come back? I have Logan Wilson coming back. What other key guys are returning for that team? I'm trying to think. Who are typically he's the biggest thing coming back by far. So.
Well, I mean, they got, you know, guys who saw a lot more playing time like later in the year, for instance, like CJ Colden and Keon Blankenbaker are probably going to be
Oh, and
if
Crawl.
they're not holding down both of those cornerback spots, they're probably going to at least compete for one of those spots.
And then Garrett Crawl too coming back because I forgot
Yeah,
about
Garrett
him.
Krall's coming back.
They're
No,
good.
Kevin Prosser's gone too. Never mind.
They bring a few guys back. Like they also have the what's his name? Cash Malua. So they got guys coming back. So that's why I'm thinking maybe if you want statistically the bigger loss for to help the team play better. I think we could maybe slide in Nico. Again, my offensive bias showing, I guess. But the running game, the pass, if the passing game is as bad as it was last year, oh boy, they're in trouble. Defense can only do so much. And so if they can find a decent running back, if it is Sean Chambers to be their quarterback, and who knows who's going to run the ball, because it took them a couple weeks to figure out if Nico Evans was their guy. New Mexico State is fine, but he got injured a couple games and whatever. It took a minute to realize what they needed, and they needed the running back, and they need to find one next year.
Yeah.
Because when he had 1,325 yards and missed two games.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we missed? I think we got everything here, because this has been a longer offseason podcast than we thought. Went 70 minutes, folks. You're welcome, except for my gas versus UNLV and forgetting them. So sorry, folks.
I think we're all set.
We are set. So we'll decide. We'll figure something out next week. We're going to make our attempt to come back every week, and we'll see. Maybe I have an idea. Let me ask you, this is a good one, Matt. We kind of do a road trip podcast. That'd be good next week, to kind of what games and weeks we want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly simple. We'll go through that, and I'll make sure I get every team alphabetically correct, so don't forget one. And let's. I think we've done this before, but should we make it where we have to visit every home campus on the conference?
Every home campus?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Not just appearing San Jose State has to, they play whoever, on the road play in New Mexico, because we want to see a crappy game. I don't know. I'm just saying, throwing teams out there. Sorry about those two teams, but you know what I mean? Two low-level teams. Let's make it different this year, where we have to make, on our trip, we have to be on every campus one time.
Well, if you've listened to our road trip podcast in the past, you already know I abide by at least trying to see every team once, but I do like that extra little twist.
Should it be every
team? Do that.
Okay, let's do that. Because I think I try to make sure every team as well.
Yeah.
But let's try to make every home campus, okay?
Cool.
Perfect. All right. So thank you for listening and getting through my little – I shouldn't keep bringing this up, should I? I should just roll through it, right? Why am I keep bringing it back up again? What's the point?
I don't know.
MWR.com. Check it out. It is March, so we do have a ton of basketball stuff. Me and Eli Betker will be doing some hoops podcasts, probably a couple extra, bracketology stuff. We'll have football stuff. I am behind, I know, of doing our all-time 20-year Mountain West team. It took me longer than I thought. So that's
we've got 10 months, I think.
We have time. I think I extended myself saying, we'll do a team every day, and we'll do this every day. You'll get stuff when you get it, folks. That's what I'm trying to say here. But we'll have spring football updates throughout, because next week there'll be a bit more newsy type things to work on and look at and listen to and hear from us. And, yeah, we'll see you next time. And if you like what we're doing, give us a review. iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. Anywhere you can find your podcast, just tell people, hey, go listen. They're sort of funny and sort of know what you're talking about. That's me. Matt knows what he's talking about for sure. I'll go that way. So you're welcome.
Most of the time, anyway.
Extra. We have fun with it. And if we mess up, let us know, because I'm not above, or you're not above, saying, hey, you're wrong.
That's true.
Unless you tell us Power 6, then you're definitely wrong no matter what.
Yeah.
With that, we'll see you next time.